Again, they'll be back next week. I can't wait to hear the stories and the music they're creating with all of the collective. So
yeah, I mean, we had Bucky come in here a few weeks ago, or a few weeks before he left.
Yeah,
and he is really talented, and it is really going to be interesting to see what he comes back with from this experience.
Yeah, it was fun to hear Mike talk about watching Bucky meet the other youth in the collectives and just that excitement.
All right, we've got about 30 seconds left. Let's talk about what some folks could do tonight if they wanted to.
Well, there's some African music happening tonight at the Goodfoot Pub and Lounge. And so, yeah, folks could check that out. Also, tomorrow night, it's important to mention quickly, if we can, we're doing our 2015 KIBU Artists in Residence. Sunny Blechinger is doing an event that sounds very... cool, and folks should check that out. And we're also going to have our 2016 Artists in Residence applications on the website tomorrow. So we'll talk more about that in the future, but folks can check that out.
In the meantime, if they want more information on that or anything else we've talked about, they can go to kboo.fm and get
always.
That info.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Monica.
Thank you.
Excellent as always, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks. See you next week.
This is KBOO Portland, 6 o'clock, up next, Right to Survive Radio. First, something that you might want to know about.
I'm Sunny Blechinger, KBOO's Artist in Residence for 2015. Hope you'll join us at the Clinton Street Theater, December 10th, Thursday night at 7 p.m. for the broadcast of my radio play, The Pool. It's about four swimmers who happen to use the same pool at the same time every week. It'll be broadcast with new video by local filmmaker Lincoln Baron Holmes and hosted by the comedians from American Comedy, Paul Schlesinger and Jason Traeger. Following the radio play will be a screening of the 1968 film The Swimmer, starring Burt Lancaster. Again, that's Thursday night, December 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. 2522 Southeast Clinton Street. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of BikeCraft, Saturday and Sunday, December 12th and 13th, at Bike Farm in Portland. BikeCraft features handmade gifts that support bike culture as well as food, drink, and music. Again, that's BikeCraft, Saturday and Sunday, December 12th and 13th, from 11 to 6 both days at Bike Farm, 1810 Northeast 1st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm. On the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not healthy.
What I do. Have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you bring.
Welcome back to another episode of Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. On your radio dial, I'm your host, Lisa Fay. And along with our interviewer, Ibrahim Mubarak, we have co-produced the second part of the Willamette River Boat Tour series, where We are speaking with community members, people from the Department of Environmental Quality, Groundworks Portland, Portland Harbor Community Coalition, the City of Portland, and other agencies involved in the Willamette River cleanup. We will be hearing from the heads of and the representatives of these organizations throughout the hour as to what their roles are and what they are doing to help with the cleanup. For those that don't know, the Willamette River has been one of the most toxic rivers in the nation and has been labeled back in 2000 as a Superfund site, which means that the government comes in, holds the industries that have polluted along the Willamette River for over 100 years accountable for their actions. There have been lawsuits and there have been agreements and there's still a lot of negotiations as to how much responsibility each industry holds and who the key offenders of polluting the river are. There's been environmental testing that has been done not just on the water quality of the river, but the fish and wildlife that their habitat is part of. Soil samples from both under the water through sediment and onshore samplings. There has been some efforts made to clear areas of land along the river. There's much interest around the houseless community that's living along the river as to displacement. And Right to Survive is also interested not only in the displacement of where the people are to go, but their health. How has the river negatively impacted their health? Not knowing, or maybe knowing, but feeling they have no other safe place to go, that there are over 100 different toxins in the sediment and water and the soil surrounding the rivers. So, without going into much more detail, let's get this show started. And I hope this will be an educational and informative show for our listeners tonight. Okay, let's get started.
Hear me?
No.
Yeah. Can you hear me upstairs? Okay. Thank you much. First of all, I'd like to thank the Port of Portland for allowing us to come on and see the Willamette River and the work that they're doing to help us breathe fresher air, eat good fish, and have good water. So let's give them a thank you and a round of applause for allowing us. Then I would like to thank Portland Harbor Coalition, Community Coalition, CAG, EPA, and it's someone another year, DEQ, and Lower Willamette River, keep going. Everybody for showing up and coming. Is that better? That's better for everybody. And we're going to have four of us speaking periodically. This is a long trip. Enjoy yourself, and then we're going to have DEQ come down, and it's going to be a question and answer. Y'all can ask them any DEA. I said DEQ, MBA. So, DEQ, a lot of people are throwing things at me, so we're going to have a question and answer session. Is that good?
Yep.
Okay, that narrowed it down. And then you can ask them. They don't want to talk about, they want to hear from the community on what they think on what we think they should do or any information or input on how we can keep our rivers clean. And I was hoping some people from Columbia River Keepers would show up also, but I don't see anyone here. So let's enjoy ourselves, have fun. We don't have enough life jackets, so if you go overboard, you better know how to swim. So we got Jim Robertson. We got Edward Bonnier, did I say it right? Bonnier, and we have Jackie Chandler, and we're going to be speaking to you off and on what our organization is doing, what we're doing as a whole collective, and what we would like for you all to help doing and to bring attention to how to keep the river clean. And if anybody else want to say anything, it's an open mic. Feel free.
I'm Jim Robinson. I'm chair of the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group. We're a group of volunteers from the community who just are watching this process quite in depth. We don't really have a budget. We don't have a staff. We are just people trying to keep track of what's happening on the river and ensuring that our voices are heard as a community for what needs to be done along the river to clean it up, to ensure that we have a clean river and a useful river as well. So I'll mention a couple of things very quickly. A lot of the contaminant that's being dealt with here in the Willamette River is contaminant from many decades ago. So while the water itself has been cleaned up through a lot of processes over the years to make the river much cleaner than it used to be, there's still a lot of that contaminant in the sediment on the river and on the areas along the shore. So you do want to be careful of certain areas along the shore to watch out for if those areas are contaminated. You also want to be careful if you're eating the fish that are resident fish in the river here. For example, if you launch a boat and fish out in the middle of the river, catch salmon, you're probably fine because the salmon are passing through here all the time. They're not as contaminated by the contaminants that are here in the river. But if you're fishing from the bank and catching carp, eating the carp out of the river, you're probably getting a lot of contaminants. The carp is the most heavily contaminated fish in the river. So we want to ensure that we get to a point eventually where it is safe to eat the carp as well as any other fish out of the river and know that you're not risking getting a lot of contaminants because of the way you're eating. The Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group has our meetings the second Wednesday of every month at 6 p.m. at the BES Water Pollution Control Test Lab, which is next to the St. John's Bridge. If we go down past the St. John's Bridge, you can actually see it. But you can check out our website as well. You can get on the internet on the website at portlandharborcag.info. Just portlandharborcag.info. And that has a lot about what's happening on the river, as well as a map showing some of the various areas that are affected and information about when our meetings come up. So with that said, I will hand this over to Edward. Let's have Edward.
Edward Hill, new executive director of Groundwork Portland, and again, thanks for setting this up. And Chris and Port of Portland and the CAG and PHCC members and Right to Dream folks being on board.
Right to Survive.
And you know, the I'm not going to talk much now because we have a longer trip, I just found out, and which is great because it gives us time to do more feedback and engage with each other and talk. And I think a lot of people don't know, haven't met me yet. I've only been executive director since April 1st, and Cassie Cohen was the previous executive director and did a lot of work with helping create and establish PHCC. So I'm really here today to find out, you know, talk to some of the partners, both the community partners and the organizational, municipal, and government partners in this work on the river to get more informed. And then also, a lot of folks have been wondering, you know, what are the next steps for Portland Harbor Community Coalition? You know, when are we going to have another meeting? Things like that. And I can give you a quick brief right now, then we can talk details later. I don't know how many people attended the Willamette River Revival. We had a big festival on the 3rd of August, right? A Sunday the 3rd of August? 2nd? It's the 2nd, Sunday the 2nd. And it was awesome. There were a lot of people there, a lot of community organizations. Folks in this room attended. It was fantastic. Thank you for being there. I think that was the first time that happened, and it was very successful. We had Nick Fish came out, and you know, folks who openly said that I wouldn't have expected I would be here today. So Nick Fish and Mike Jordan were there, the new BES director, and everyone started this conversation about, okay, so what are our next steps now that we have action starting? EPA is starting to show some movement now. You know, papers are being moved around and more conversations and federal dollars are starting to be discussed. And for me, I really do want to connect and find out what actual things that we can do on the ground in terms of site-based projects. You know, what work can we actually start to engage in to make sure that, and for me, it's not, you know, I'm coming from a different place. I think from my background in environmental justice, and a lot of that has been about jobs and housing and improving our general livability, you know, the livability of our community. So that's environmental justice at the action base. So what kind of jobs can we start to prepare for Superfund?
About the job readiness program. That program, it's down the line, but when it is announced, if it's announced, it will be open to anyone. So you don't specifically have to have a college education. The training and certification that you would receive would be through that program, and it's of no charge. But again, we would need, one of the big things is having the jobs available.
It's Alana Conley with the EPA.
So that would be after, it's going to be past 2017. Yeah.
This is more along the jobs line also, but from two fronts. One for jobs. Will the EPA have influence to bring more and better laboratories here? Two, will we be able to get training for those laboratories? And three, we need those laboratories so we can do a good job. Yeah. In the past, we've experienced the laboratory testing was slow. It didn't give proper feedback. It was inadequate. And if that happens and you're in the middle of a project like dredging or something on that order, and they can't test properly, then they don't have the information whether they should continue the dredging cycle or not. And if you have proper laboratories, the feedback can be quicker, more efficient, more accurate, and it can give information to those people that are, you know, have jurisdiction over the dredging.
Thank you, Jackie. So before any work or sampling is done in the river, the responsible parties will submit sampling plans to the EPA and to DEQ, depending on where in the river the sampling is going to happen. And we have to approve all of that. So we will review all the sampling plans, make sure they're getting sent to approved laboratories. And we have quality control and quality assurance processes that we go through to ensure that.
That the laboratories were not local, that they were so far away that there was a 3-day turnaround. Well, it's pretty difficult to be in the middle of a dredging project and stop, wait for the lab results, and then try to do something. That isn't going to work in this situation. So I'm suggesting that the EPA encourages them to get more and better laboratories here in Portland.
Those are all considerations to think about during the remedial design process. So we're not quite there yet.
priority by the EPA in 2000, and I'm just wondering what the plan was immediately in 2000 and why, what's the holdup that there's now a plan that will be implemented in 2016. What's happened over the last 15 years since this was declared a priority?
Yeah, unfortunately, Superfund as a process is not the fastest thing the government can pull off, but we've done multiple rounds of sampling the past 15 years, and this is a very large site. It's 10 miles of a very complex river, so it's required, you know, a lot of rounds of sampling of different material, the sediment, the fish, the riverbanks, the water, and that's all time-intensive, unfortunately, but at this point, we think we have a solid amount of data to come up with a cleanup plan, and that's what we'll be putting forward in the spring.
So, follow up, how does that compare with other Superfund sites as far as, like, 15 years of testing? Is that normal?
It's all very site-specific. So, this is considered a very large, complex site nationally. So, I'm not sure exactly how it compares to other sites of this specific size, but that's, yeah, every site goes through the same process. So.
Concern is the toxic waste that has been talked about. Is the toxic waste in the river? Because I've seen people actually swimming in it, and I'm very concerned about people's safety. So is there anything that's being done about that?
That's Claudine Long with Right to Dream 2.
Thank you for your question. That is a concern. And again, we know that the there is waste in this river. There are contaminants in the river that are a threat to human health and to the environment. And again, that is why we're working on it. Most of the contaminants that is related to the Superfund site, it's bound to the soil that's under the river. And the biggest threat from those contaminants is from eating resident fish, especially women who are pregnant, women who are nursing. And so that's the message, you know, definitely that we want to be careful with. And also, again, we have, there's someone, Karen Bishop is here from the Oregon Health Authority and can provide more specific information about those health threats. I don't want to speak on those because she is the authority for that. Doing what we're doing. The information that we have allows us to know that there are risks in the river, and the risks were great enough that EPA needs to take action. So that's why we're here, and that's why we're putting together a plan. And that's why we need your input, not next year, but even now, just talking with you all tonight and getting your input and hearing your feedback and hearing your concerns. That's very much helpful to us to see how many people actually came out tonight. You could have been anywhere doing anything, but you came out tonight to tell us what you think and what you've seen, and we really do appreciate that concern, and we're here to hear you and to continue to hear you. And I would say, if you do have concerns about your dog or kids swimming in the river, make sure, you know, your friends or relatives also share your concern. That's one of our big goals with reaching out to you, is to spread the word about what the risks are.
questions I've been asked. Okay, the Oregon Health Authority.
Yeah, we did also want to mention, Jerry, that the Oregon Health Authority is here, and they have information about, because there are other things that are going on the river. We all know about the algal bloom that happened, and they asked people not to enter the river. And there's other things that just naturally occur in the river, and some of them things are not. But we do ask that you do keep in contact with the Oregon Health Authority, and they're doing their own outreach, too, and connecting with Ibrahim to keep people informed.
People tonight is, when does cleanup actually start from everything that's being done? When do we actually see work being done in the river for this cleanup? And the other question is, will there be people hired for the cleanup, or will it be people coming from other places to work on it?
So to answer the when question, we're in the process right now of coming out with a proposed plan this spring, and then towards the end of 2016, hopefully, we should have a record of decision. And after the record of decision is when we would enter the remedial design phase. And I think someone has mentioned earlier today that that will entail another round of sampling to get a better, more updated baseline. And once we have that, then we'll design the actual remedies and the work will begin in the river.
And the jobs are something that are that's a very important component as well. And EPA has something called a Superfund Jobs Training Initiative, where we have a program to provide certification and job skills to allow people, this is of no charge, to allow people to have the tools that they need to actually be able to apply for cleanup specific jobs. It's been done at other sites, and we've been in contact with the organizer of that to see if it can also happen at this site as well. On top of that, we're working with the Oregon tradeswomen. I don't see anyone here tonight, but we have quarterly meetings with them where we put on a training workshop to talk about Portland Harbor and possibly how they could incorporate their school skills that they're learning with the tradeswomen at Portland Harbor. Another avenue that I'd suggest is to also talk with the Oregon Environmental Justice Task Force, who also presented us with that same question about how do we incorporate community members to work on the cleanup jobs here in Portland, at the harbor, rather than bringing in or outsourcing jobs from people from other areas. So I would recommend that you keep in contact with them. And also, you know, talk with to Oregon DEQ, and also spend some time too with some of the people that would be responsible for the cleanup, because EPA would not be the ones hiring those to do the cleanup work, but some of the industry and other governments that are involved with the cleanup, the potentially responsible parties, just see what's available there and just, you know, do your work on that side.
Yes, we multiply. Anyone press will hear the fine lady sing. Act like you know, recall. I know what won't come, no. Touch them up and go. Oh, ching ching. Become a staffer. On the lyric of cancer. Excuse me, Mr. Officer. Still living that bad.
River, and there's other things that just naturally occur in the river, and some of them things are not. But we do ask that you do keep in contact with the Oregon Health Authority, and they're doing their own outreach too and connecting with Ibrahim to keep people informed.
Okay, so Elena, a couple questions that I've received from people tonight is, when does cleanup actually start? From everything that's being done, when do we actually see work being done in the river for this cleanup? And the other question is, will there be people hired for the cleanup, or will it be people coming from other places to work on it?
So to answer the when question, we're in the process right now of coming out with a proposed plan this spring, and then towards the end of 2016, hopefully, we should have a record of decision. And after the record of decision is when we would enter the remedial design phase. And I think someone has mentioned earlier today that that will entail another round of sampling to get a better, more updated baseline. And once we have that, then we'll design the actual remedies and the work will begin in the river.
And the jobs are something that are that's a very important component as well. And EPA has something called a Superfund Jobs Training Initiative, where we have a program to provide certification and job skills to allow people, this is of no charge, to allow people to have the tools that they need to actually be able to apply for cleanup specific jobs. It's been done at other sites, and we've been in contact with the organizer of that to see if it can also happen at this site as well. On top of that, we're working with the Oregon tradeswomen. I don't see anyone here tonight, but we have quarterly meetings with them where we put on a training workshop to talk about Portland Harbor and possibly how they could incorporate their school skills that they're learning with the tradeswomen at Portland Harbor. Another avenue that I suggest is to also talk with the Oregon Environmental Justice Task Force, who also presented us with that same question about how do we incorporate community members to work on the cleanup jobs here at in Portland at the harbor, rather than bringing in or outsourcing jobs from people from other areas. So I would recommend that you keep in contact with them, and also, you know, talk with Oregon DEQ, and also spend some time too with some of the people that would be responsible for the cleanup, because EPA would not be the ones hiring those to do the cleanup work, but some of the industry and other governments that are involved with the cleanup, the potentially responsible parties, just see what's available there and just, you know, do your work on that side.
I'd like to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
By the hand, take me by the hand. Pretty mama, come and dance with your daddy all night long.
I'd like to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
By the hand, take me by the hand. Pretty mama, come and dance with your daddy all night long.
I'd like to hear some funky Dixieland. Pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
Different and distinct questions. First of all, what type of job readiness programs or what type of apprentice programs can you say are going to be offered to people that are low to no income that may have never had any job experience before, that don't meet a college degree type criteria? And will there be any jobs offered? And second of all, on the Willamette Cove site, everything from the fenced off area down to the river, I understand, needs to be excavated and removed from there. Where is that soil going to go? And once it goes, what's going to, if anything, is going to be replaced into that area?
Thank you for your question.
I'll answer at once.
Okay, well, Willamette Cove, the contaminated soil will be removed from the site and it'll go to an approved landfill that's appropriate for this kind of waste. So the designated landfill we're looking at is in Wasco County in eastern Oregon. So it'll go a fairly good distance. But it's an approved landfill and it's appropriate for this material. As far as what will go in the hole, Imported, clean imported soil will go in some of the areas. Most of the contamination we've identified as just surface contamination. So we're looking at removing maybe 6 inches of soil. And in those areas, if they're small enough, we'll regrade the edges so that they don't become a trip hazard. And then it's reseeded with native grasses to protect the habitat.
Were you also asking about
the employment? I was also asking about the employment and how people that don't have high school diplomas or higher education now are able to access jobs. If there'll be any jobs providing.
Jackie, you was next, right?
Go ahead. Is there anyone here that can answer that?
No. Go ahead, Jackie.
Okay. All right, so again, responding to your question about the job readiness program, that program, it's down the line, but when it is announced, if it's announced, it will be open to anyone. So you don't specifically have to have a college education. The training and certification that you would receive would be through that program, and it's of no charge. But again, we would need, one of the big things is having the jobs available. Well, so that would be after, it's going to be past 2017. Yeah.
Give me 5 on that one.
I think Jackie.
You know you want to. And then
she was the
best.
You
know, it's all right. This is a great question for Wes. This is more along the jobs line also, but from two friends, one for jobs. Will the EPA have influence to bring more and better laboratories here? Two, will we be able to get training for those laboratories? And three, we need those laboratories so we can do a good job. Yeah, in the past we've experienced the laboratory testing was slow, it didn't give proper feedback, it was inadequate, and if that happens and you're in the middle of a project like dredging or something on that order and they can't test properly, then they don't have the information whether they should continue the dredging cycle or not. And if you have proper laboratories, the feedback can be quicker, more efficient, more accurate, and it can give information to those people that are, you know, have jurisdiction over the dredging.
Thank you, Jackie. So before any work or sampling is done in the river, the responsible parties will submit sampling plans to the EPA and to DEQ, depending on where in the river the sampling is going to happen. And we have to approve all of that. So we will review all the sampling plans, make sure they're getting sent to approved laboratories. And we have quality control and quality assurance processes that we go through to ensure that.
Hey, Jeremy, it's a linebacker.
One of the problems in the past is that the laboratories were not local, that they were so far away that there was a 3-day turnaround. Well, it's pretty difficult to be in the middle of a dredging project and stop, wait for the lab results, and then try to do something. That isn't going to work in this situation. So I'm suggesting that the EPA encourages them to get more and better laboratories here in Portland.
Those are all considerations to think about during the remedial design process. So we're not quite there yet, but thank you.
So I have a question. This site was declared a priority by the EPA in 2000, and I'm just wondering what the plan was immediately in 2000 and why what's the holdup that there is now a plan that will be implemented in 2016? What's happened over the last 15 years since this was declared a priority?
Yeah, unfortunately, Superfund as a process is not the fastest thing the government can pull off, but we've done multiple rounds of sampling the past 15 years, and this is a very large site. It's 10 miles of a very complex river, so it's required, you know, a lot of rounds of sampling of different material, the sediment, the fish, the riverbanks, the water, and that's all time intensive, unfortunately. But at this point, we think we have a solid amount of data to come up with a cleanup plan, and that's what we'll be putting forward in the spring.
So follow up, how does that compare with other Superfund sites as far as like 15 years of testing? Is that normal?
It's all very site specific. So this is considered a very large, complex site nationally. So I'm not sure exactly how it compares to other sites of this specific size, but that's, yeah, every site goes through the same process. So.
Hi, my concern is the toxic waste that has been talked about is the toxic waste in the river, because I've seen people actually swimming in it, and I'm very concerned about people's safety. So is there anything that's being done about that?
Yeah, thank you for your question. That is a concern, and again, we know that the there is waste in this river. There are contaminants in the river that are a threat to human health and to the environment. And again, that is why we're working on it. Most of the contaminants that is related to the Superfund site, it's down to the soil that's under the river. And the biggest threat from those contaminants is from eating resident fish, especially women who are pregnant, women who are nursing. And so that's the message, you know, that you want to be careful.
Karen Bishop, and the.
Come on, Karen. You're talking on the question
about health.
Oh, you wanted to know the question.
Health concerns about the river, and if you have any information.
So I have some educational materials over here on the table. Talks about the fish advisory that exists in Portland Harbor. Let's see, we have a summary of a public health assessment that we conducted on the Portland Harbor Superfund site. I'm with public health, by the way. I didn't quite introduce myself. I'm a public health educator, and I work with a program that does public health assessments at contaminated sites. So we look at the data that is collected from EPA and DEQ, and we look at it through the lens of public health, the public health lens, and try to determine what the health risks are for the communities that are living nearby. And I think I have some fish cards. That's what I call them.
Yeah.
So I'll put some of those out too. They're healthy fish wallet cards. So that's it.
My question is,
about the capping over the Willamette Cove. You have cement caps running. How far do they run down from the lip on the top?
Are you asking about the McCormick and Baxter cap?
The capping.
Right.
Okay, the cement capping is going down underneath the water level.
Right.
Okay, how far do they go down?
So I don't know the exact distance offshore. The it's called articulated concrete block. That's the
I don't know exactly what
right. But then beyond that, there's rock armoring under the river or under the water. So the concrete blocks don't extend all the way down. But then the rest of the sand cap is armored with rock. So there's it varies from 6 to 10 inch sized rock. Right, but there's a sand cap and...
with DQ. I don't know the exact answer to that, but I think this is one of those design details that we can find out the information and get back to you. Yeah.
Watershed area, you have a bunch of hilly areas around there. Okay, rain. Okay, watershed comes down through the mountains, down underneath your shell, down underneath into your sand, and brings that back up. It's going to rear its ugly head later on. So why don't we take and crack up that cap and bring everything on shore and let it dry out and excavate it from there and trade out?
So I'm not speaking on behalf of DEQ. They're the lead for the McCormick and Baxter site. But I will say that every sediment cap has to be monitored every 5 years. And we're actually in the process of monitoring it right now. And but this is the third 5-year review for that site. And we're doing the sampling. We didn't have problems with it during the previous 5-year review, and that's why we keep monitoring it to make sure that it hasn't become a problem.
So the McCormick and Baxter site, the nature of the contaminants there, they're denser than water, the creosote, for example. So when you spill that material, it sinks into the ground and displaces the groundwater and sinks quite a ways down. I don't know the exact depth, but basically it was determined to be deep enough and voluminous enough that it really wasn't feasible to excavate it out of there. So what the decision was, Upland, was to isolate it. So they surrounded that problem by putting a sheet pile wall down to depth and then a soil bentonite slurry wall behind it. So now when groundwater comes off the east side of the river or the hills, it actually flows right around that problem. It doesn't carry it out to the river. And then the cap that you're talking about is really capping sediment there that is outside of that area. So.
Question is, has anyone done a survey of just plain garbage, tires, shopping carts, and just solid debris on the river bottom? Okay.
Hi, I'm Barbara. When we did our survey of the bottom of the river, we took kind of a picture of the bottom of the river. They call it bathymetry. It shows sort of what the contours are. And we know that looking at those mapping, there are areas of the river that have a lot of debris. When we get to that stage in the cleanup that EPA was talking about, where we're actually designing the cleanup, we will have to we'll have to go and look at exactly what's in there. And because, yeah, I'm sure there is too. And that goes into the design of whether you can dredge there or whether you can cap there or anything like, so we don't know, we don't have an inventory, but that would be a part of the design process because you can't go in and put like the cap that they have there without, and maybe you know at McCormick and Baxter how much
A PGE sediment cleanup site that the state's working on here, and my understanding is what they're doing right now, and they're just finishing up, is debris removal, pilings, and all this other stuff that has to come out before they can lay that cap down. So they use side scan sonar to identify that material, and then they go after and remove it.
It's washed down over the years.
Okay.
I know some rivers back east have been surveying. So much, I mean, just the amount of garbage and cars and
It's clearly an issue when they get into cleaning up the sediment. So.
I have two questions, and they have to do with human beings being on site. The first is there any funds that can be set aside or allocated for assistance in relocation of persons that are on existing sites? And the second would be, are there any plans on assisting people medical-wise as far as people that have already had contamination and been in contact with contamination as time goes on and maladies start to show up in these people?
I'm not sure of that, but what I would do, you know, if that question, and I don't know if Ibrahim has posed that question to the city of Portland about relocation, I'm not aware of a relocation for people that might be living up here. But that's something that we can look into, but also perhaps maybe check with the city of Portland if they have something available. I'm just not sure about that.
I'll be right on that.
Yeah, and that's another one that I'm not clear about either.
Your housing, you have no rights. You have no rights to humanity and human rights because there's no publicness in sleeping on the streets. And when I say that, I mean there's no public restroom. There's no public, the shelters are overcrowded. So if you're sleeping on the streets, you get swept and moved. And that's what's happening here all over the country, that people are losing their housing due to affordability. And the biggest question there is not where is the money, is where do they go? Where do people go who was raised and trained and believed in the American concept? And if you don't meet those credentials, you're not patronizing an American concept, so you left and you abandoned where there's no rights for you. And more people are being swept off the city streets, off the park blocks, into the river till you can't go anymore. And then they say that the houseless people are destroying the environment because where do they go to the restroom at if there's no public restroom? Where do they throw their trash away if there's no trash collector or nothing? So these are the things that why Right to Survive joined Portland Harbor Community Coalition and the Superfund, because we notice, and as you've seen, our people living on the banks of this land. So we would like for people to clean up and address problems, how people can live effectively and keep the environmental clean, because as one of our members, Terry Light, said that people are inadvertently being forced to destroy the environment by their waste with no place to put it. So the question is that I want to bring to everybody's attention, where do we go? What do we do once we get there? And after the Superfund, after the river is cleaned up, will the houseless people be allowed to come back here, or will they build condominiums for people so they can have riverfront or lakefront property? So now, in this environment where people are living, how can we educate them about the waste? Because when we, Right to Survive, did our tour, we made a mini film, we talked to people and we saw people living along the riverbank, and we was letting them know how the toxicity of that land, where they growing vegetables because they can't make it to shelters to eat. And in that vegetable, they growing vegetables in the sediment of the toxic water that's going into that land. So they eating toxic vegetables. They're using the water to wash up in, and the water is toxic. They breaking out in whelps and scabs and stuff. And the dogs, their pets are losing their hair due to the toxicity of water. So we went out educating them and having them to boil the water, showing how they take the fat out the fish, where that's where all the toxins in your body and the fish lands in the fatty tissue, and how to properly cut the fish up. And so I know you all have questions that y'all want to ask, or you all can either come and join us in the Superfund and be sure it's a solidarity where we can fight together, because our body is what 70% water, I think, and we need our water. We need to survive. We need to put pressure on the government to help clean our water up, because the animals is not destroying this planet. We are the humans. We the worst creatures to this planet, because we destroying things in the name of development. And we need to talk to the big business improvement district to stop building things, chasing the poor people out, where people with low income to no income to live. We need to share this planet together. And the more we develop, the more we create things, we destroying this world. And as you can see along the river, how things is happening, where things is looking sad. And it's not the houseless people that destroying the river. It's the industrial and the corporation that's destroying our water, that's destroying our land, that's destroying humanity. So I that's all I want you all to hear from me right now, because I know a lot of you have questions and some of us have answers, but maybe we can come reason together. We can figure out how we all can share this land and our differences. We need to learn to put our differences behind us and come together as a whole, because this is the only planet we got.
Was what company are
is a group of, the answer is EPA has identified, it's a couple hundred different organizations, and it's not just companies, it's also the federal government, the Navy, companies, and a lot of different potentially responsible parties. What the group that I work with, which is the port and the city and Northwest Natural and a lot of the other business around here, came together and signed an agreement with EPA to pay for the investigation, the scientific study that we've been paying for. And so the companies and the city and the port have paid for that. Now, when EPA comes out with their final plan, that's when they'll say, you owe this much, you owe that much, you owe. And so there are a lot of other people and a lot of other organizations will have to come and pay their fair share. So yes, they have been identified. EPA has done quite a bit of work to identify parties that, and some of them are no longer here. Right? You know, so there's a lot of work going on identifying those who are responsible for the law and design. I'm going to fall in love with you. All I ever want to do is thank you, babe. Thank you, babe.